Okay, today is Wednesday, August 15th, 2018, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly lunch and learn on Parshat HaShavua. And this week we are going to be studying Parshat Shoftim, which you could find on page 1024 in the Chumashim. And I have a handout with some sources for everybody. So kindly take one and pass.
Take one and pass.
She's looking for the Chumashim.
I'll go.
Okay. So
1024.
So in chapter 17, verse 20, we have a very famous pasuk, and this is on page 1000. We are going to be...
I'm sorry, excuse me.
Page 1024, chapter 16, verse 20.
Oh, okay.
Any more going around? Any extra? You have to share. Sorry, we ran out. Okay. So this is a well-known pasuk. Pasuk 20 in chapter 16. Tzedek, tzedek tirdof. L'man tichyev yarashte ta'aretz asher Adonai Elohecha notain lach. Righteousness, righteousness shall you pursue so that you will live and possess the land that Hashem, your God, gives you. Page 1024, Pasuk 20. Right on top of the page. Okay? All right. So, this Pasuk is understood in various different ways. There's a discussion as to why there's a repetition of the word tzedek, why tzedek, tzedek tirdof. An interesting Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, which you do not have on your sheet, says as follows. Tzedek, it's not on your sheet. Tzedek, tzedek tirdof. Halech achar beit din yafeh. You should seek out an appropriate beit din, meaning not every court is necessarily just, not every court is necessarily going to follow the rules, and so you have to seek it out, the tirdof, right? You have to proactively seek out a beit din that is appropriate. And so the Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer went to Lod, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went to another city. Right? They specifically left their cities in order to try to make sure they would find a Beit Din that was appropriate. And so there, in explaining that Gemara, Rashi says that this is the obligation of the Baalei Din. Right? This is an obligation of the litigants, right? Of the litigants in a case, that they have to seek out, they have to look for a beit din that is appropriate, even if that means going to a beit din in another city. The Ramban says that the repetition of the word tzedek teaches that there are two different mitzvot, two different commandments that are inherent in this verse. One is for the dayanim, right, the judges, that they have to judge in a just way, in a way of tzedek. And the other is the baalei din. The litigants have to seek out a place where the judges are wise and the judges are fair, right? Tzedek, tzedek tirdof, meaning two groups of people have to make sure that they're going to seek out a fair and just way that the case will be heard, One is the litigants need to do that, as the Gemara says, even if it means going to a different place. And the judges themselves also have to seek out, they have to make sure that they're going to judge, that they're going to judge accordingly. This is actually interesting because sometimes in America, right, we have a situation where the case is moved from one city to another city, from one town to another town, because the feeling is that justice can't be served in the place where the event happened or the crime took place, because the well has been poisoned, or that too many people know about it, or it would be overwhelming one way or the other, and so the case is moved, which sort of seems to dovetail well with this notion of the Gemara that says you have to seek out a judge that's going to judge the case fairly. Question?
It's a neutral place.
Yeah, exactly. No, the dayanim and the ba'alei din, the litigants, the people who are bringing the case, the defendant and the ba'alei din, that's the term. No, not orchei din, not the lawyers, the people. You're suing somebody. You and the person you're suing are the ba'alei din. They're the ones who have the case, and they have to seek out a court that's going to be fair, and the dayanim also have to be fair. Yeah.
It's funny that both explanation is towards an institution, the building. Isn't it just that plainly a message that people should look after justice? Judges or whatever, and why the institution? Why
it's not the institution.
Say that to look for a nice place.
No. Not a nice building. A court that's going to be fair. Exactly like you're saying.
Isn't the court supposed to be fair from the beginning?
Yeah, we would think, but we know that that's not always
true.
That's why it's court. Right? So it's not the building. We don't care about the building. Which actually is a very good segue into what we're going to talk about. But when it says Beit Din Yafeh, it doesn't mean pretty. It means proper, appropriate, fair. So you have to if you think that the judges in your city are crooked, don't judge the case there. Even if you think they're going to be crooked on your behalf, you have to go to a place that's going to be honest.
I didn't mean Yafeh and beautiful and just proper and with a reputation.
Correct. Right. Exactly. That's exactly what it means. The question they deal with is why they say it twice, tzedek, tzedek, dov. Who are we talking about? So, to the two different main groups. Yeah. Dov?
I'm just trying to read the pshat. It looks to me like these are instructions to the judge. Right?
So why tzedek twice?
For the shoftim
Why tzedek twice, Dov?
I don't know, but interpretation is...
Okay, usually, we generally speaking, I think in Parshanut, it's not so popular to say that we repeat words for emphasis. Every word is carefully calibrated.
But I'm saying that it seems to me that saying that one of them is to the people who are doing the case doesn't make sense to me. It may be two forms of righteousness that the judges have to do. I just don't see. It's talking to the judge. It seems to me.
The commentary says it's not enough to seek righteousness. It must be done through honest means. So one should pursue righteousness only through righteousness.
Right. Meaning, even if you're going to give the right. There, it's saying that even if you're going to give the right or the proper or the just verdict, if it came through a bribe, it's still wrong.
Right.
Okay, so that would be along the lines of what Dov is saying.
It's just simple. One for the shoftim and one for the shotrim.
No, because shotrim don't judge. Shotrim don't judge.
They arrest something.
But they don't judge.
Make a judgment when they arrest.
That's true. Okay, could be. Okay. Okay. What's that?
Shoftim is the judges
over. Right.
And the shotrim.
No, the shotrim are really the.
The arresting officer.
Shotrim harodim. Yes, The Shotrim are the ones who the Shotrim are the ones, as Rashi says, are the people who make sure the people are following the rules. Like I guess like a police force. Like not a police force. Yeah. I'm sorry, say the question again.
Why can't you just say it applies to seeking any kind of justice? Why do you have to pertain to actually two specific groups?
Because in context, it's talking about a court of law. I mean, if you read just read the first few psukim, in context, it's talking about a court of law. Okay, so I want to focus on the commentaries of the Sforno, Rav Avadya Sforno, about in terms of how he views this whole pasuk, and how he connects what comes next as well to what came before it, because there's an interesting question, right? Let's just look at the pasukim on page 1024. We have these three verses that talk to us about some sort of proper behavior in court proceedings and law enforcement, let's say. Okay? Shoftim v'shotim ten lecha b'chol sharecha, lo tatem mishpat, right? You should not pervert justice. Lo takir panim, lo takach shochad, right? Against bribery. And then all of a sudden, in verse number 21, chafalaf, lo tita lecha sheira kol etz, etzel mizbach Hashem lukecha. As they say in French, mehechi tesi, where does that come from? Yeah. Right, all of a sudden, now we're talking about Avodah Zarah. Right, all of a sudden, we're talking about an idolatry. This is, as Dov pointed out, this is the context, is a court case. And then it continues. Lo takim lecha matzei v'asher sanei Hashem elokecha. Right, you can't have a pillar for yourself. And then, when you're bringing a karbon, don't bring one with a mum. Meaning, why do you have this juxtaposition of one of these items, of Avodah Zarah and the type of carbonate you could bring, following immediately after what seems to be very clear to be directions or instructions regarding law enforcement and court proceedings. So the Sforno is going to try to help us understand exactly what's going on here. And he actually offers a beautiful idea. So let's first start. Let's first start with the first comments of the Sforno, which are right on. You see his name, Avadya Sforno. He lived from 1470 to 1550, and this is his comment on Tzedek Tirdof on the first pasuk on Chaf Aleph. He says, "When you are about to put this legislation into practice, the party in charge of appointing judges is told by Moshe to select only those who are already known for their sense of fair play and righteousness." Okay, that's pretty straightforward, right? You're going to appoint judges. The judges have to be fair and righteous.
Yeah, but Rabbi is also saying something else.
Yeah,
it's also saying to go to judges who are familiar with that type of problem.
Sure, of course.
That's what it's really saying.
Of course. Okay, so when you're going to...
Judges here and there, they were always trying to be fair.
We would hope.
We would hope.
But apparently, I don't know if that's always the case, because Moshe maybe would not have had to say this if that was so obvious. Right? Right? So, when you're going to select the judges, you're going to appoint the judges to the bench, you have to choose ones who are fair and righteous. He will have to look for such people all over the tribe. If potential judges do not have all the qualifications which are desirable in the judge, this qualification of fairness is the overriding quality all must possess. Which is so what the Sforno is reminding us is that it's true that the most important quality in a judge is fairness and righteousness, but there are other qualities that judges should have. For example,
compassion.
Wealth is a good idea for a judge. Why is it a good idea for a judge to be rich?
He
Because then he won't be bribed, right? He won't be bribed,
well,
right?
And we have wealthy people in Congress.
And then he continues as a foreigner. No, this is what the prophet Samuel was told by God when he had to look for a replacement of King Shaul among the sons of Yishai. He was specifically told to ignore external appearances, right? That's something in a king also, or maybe even a judge. You want someone who has a certain regal look that they could command respect and command people pay attention to them. That's also an important aspect in a leader and in a judge. But if you have to choose between wealth and righteousness or wealth and the ability to command respect because of the person's physical appearance, righteousness comes first. Meaning, what's going on? And let's just read the pasuk here in Shmuel, which is provided for you. V'yom Hashem el Shmuel, al tabet el marehu, ve'el givoa komato, pay no attention to his appearance or his stature, ki me'astihu, ki lo asher yireh ha'adam, ki adam yireh le'inayim, v'ashem yireh le'levav. For I have rejected him, for not as man sees does the Lord see. Man sees only what is visible, but the Lord sees into his heart. So here,
him, he's talking about Shaul, is that right?
Anybody, not necessarily anybody, right? So what's happening here is the Sephorno is saying that the most important quality in a judge is the internal quality. When you look at a judge, you may be able to tell if they're rich. You may be able to tell if they command respect by the way they look, but you can't look at a judge and tell if they're honest, right? Only God could look into someone's heart and tell if they're honest. So we have to. The Sephorno is saying what we're being told here is we have to pay more attention to the internal qualities of the judge than to the external qualities of the judge, which may seem obvious because even though the external qualities are important, they are not as important as the internal quality of justice and righteousness. And if you have to choose between one or the other, we have to choose the internal quality. Okay? That's the Sephorno on Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof. Right? We have to make sure that we're finding a proper judge.
So how does that explain why the term is said twice?
He doesn't. He's not addressing that. Okay?
All right. I thought I missed something.
Okay. He's not addressing that. So now we turn to the second question we asked, which was, what of all these next three prohibitions have to do with finding a judge that has the internal qualities while being taught that external qualities should be rejected? Okay, what does one have to do with the other? So the Sephorno here is brilliant. So first we have the three psukim that I mentioned. One is Lo tita lecha shira kol etz etzel mizbach Hashem Elokecha asher taselach. Do not set up a sacred post. Lo takim lecha matzeva and Lo tizbach Hashem Elokecha shur vaseh asher yebomu. No sacrifices that have any serious defect. So let's read the Sephorno starting towards the bottom of page one. He says first, Lo tita lecha asherah. In this verse, the Torah lists three items whose common denominator is that they appeal to the senses, are desirable, but at the same time are spiritually negative and harmful. So you may see where he's going here, right? The internal is more important. Something externally may look beautiful, but it actually may be harmful. The first one is the Asherah, something beautiful and decorative for buildings, but at the same time, something ugly from the vantage point of holiness, as it is usually a conduit leading to idolatrous practice. Since that is so, we are commanded whenever faced with such choices to give preference to that which leads to spiritual righteousness at the expense of physical perfection or beauty. By the same token, we are to prefer spiritual qualities possessed by someone chosen as a judge to external features, impressive though they may be. So the Sephorno makes a direct connection between the prohibition of the Asherah to the qualifications needed for a judge. The Asherah looks beautiful, and it may add beauty to your surroundings, But ultimately, it's a tool for avodah zarah, which is spiritually ugly. And so therefore, it has to be rejected. Just like the wealth or the good looks of the judge need to be rejected in favor of the righteousness of the judge. This reminds me of the famous Saturday Night Live skit, which was, if you remember, it's better to look good than to feel good. Remember, they would have all these people come up and they were wearing these uncomfortable clothing and doing all these things, but they were very trendy and they were very popular. And he would say, it's better to look good than to feel good, right? So here the Torah is saying, no, it's better to be good than to look good, right? And so the Asherah, which looks good and looks beautiful, is really, internally, it's negative. Not to compare and to distinguish between Rabbi Soloveitchik and Saturday Night Live, Rabbi Soloveitchik also, he writes about shuls. He says this, he writes somewhat negatively about, I guess, what became known as the edifice complex, right? The desire to build beautiful and big shuls that look really, really nice, but they don't really have a sense of, let's say, Yirat Shamayim, of fear and awe of God, and they sort of lack a religious sensibility, right? And so that's what he's saying here.
There are a few people missing from this lesson who could use it.
Okay, so the next thing, yes.
I know. I apologize.
Is it just everything that you say?
It was something that. No, it's a really idolatrous tree. People would do some sort of idolatrous practices around this tree. Yeah. Okay, the next one, the Matseva. Even though such a kind of altar was welcomed by God as an outlet for someone who wanted to bring an offering to God, this was before the Torah had been given. Consider, for example, Exodus 24:4, where the Torah welcomed 12 such monuments erected by Moshe, where these monuments symbolized the fact that the person offering a sacrifice considered himself as constantly in the presence of the divine. The Jewish people had not been able to maintain this spiritual level after they had committed the sin of the golden calf. Even when such a matzivah is dedicated to heaven, it had become hateful in the eyes of the Lord, i.e. God expressed his distaste in Exodus 33:3, after having provisionally forgiven the people by appointing an angel to lead them to the Holy Land, but refusing to lead their ascent by his presence being among them. We encounter a similar concept described as the difference between an old man whose beard proclaims his respectability as opposed to the old man whose beard is disheveled, reveals traces of a youth which was spent irresponsibly. We look for people whose exterior testifies to their blameless interior character. So it's true that a matzeva at one point was something good, but ultimately God said, no more matzevot. You have to stay. It's now only the Mishkan and only the Beit HaMikdash for karbanot. You can't build a karban matzeva in your backyard anymore. It now is only centralized. So it seems good. At one point it was good. It looks good because it looks like a mizbeach. It looks like something that we used to use for the good. But now it's no good. And that's, I think, what the Sephorno was saying, the beard, right? The beard could be a symbol of something, respect, but it also could be a symbol of something, like the same thing could be sometimes a symbol of something positive and sometimes a symbol of something negative. So that's how he connects. So similarly, he's suggesting that's the connection to the judge, right? The judge also, the matzeva looks good, but it's not. Similarly, you could have a judge who has the external appearances, like we said, or the wealth, like we discussed, yet lacks the internal righteousness and justice, and therefore that's rejected. Exactly. Right.
Don't look at the outside.
Right. That's from Pirkei Avot.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
So,
and finally, the third item, also reminding us of the rejection of an externally, basically beautiful animal as a sacrifice, is a series of blemishes, some quite minor, not affecting the value of the animal in question in the marketplace at all. Such a blemish blemish in an animal worth $1,000 disqualifies it as an offering, whereas another similar animal worth one single dollar but without such a blemish is given preference over the far more expensive animal which is rejected. Right? You could have an animal which is a big bull, it's worth a lot of money, but it has a blemish, so therefore it can't be brought as a karban. You have a tiny little bird, which is much cheaper, but since it has no blemish, or a lamb, whatever, much cheaper, has no blemish, therefore it can be brought as a karban. The Torah gives us three examples to teach us basically the same lesson. What is true of the blemished animal for presentation on the altar is equally true for the venerable old scholar who is afflicted with some character fault. We are to look further in order to find a less impressive individual not afflicted with such a character fault. So the blemish on the animal represents the character fault, and even though it's tiny and doesn't really affect the value of the animal on the open marketplace would still sell for a lot of money, but it doesn't matter, right? Because from the perspective of the mizbeach, of what's required and what's appropriate for the altar, there's something wrong with it, even though it's beautiful. So you have to find something that may be less beautiful, but is more spiritually appropriate.
You're comparing the animal to a person. The blemish on the animal is not the animal's fault.
Correct. And the fact that a tree is also a avodah zarah is also not the tree's fault. Right? Yeah. None of these are anyone's fault. They're just symbolic of this idea.
Can do, as a person, as a human, they can change or they can
right.
do. An animal can't. It is
right.
what it is.
Right. Right. So all of these ideas are... So that's how... This is how the Sephorno connects these three verses to the requirement to find the judge that has the internal quality, right? The matseva, the asherah, the animal, they may be very valuable like the animal, but they all have some sort of flaw, and therefore we have to look for something. We have to reject the matseva and we have to reject the asherah, and we have to find a different animal, even though that other animal is not going to be as beautiful as the other. Similarly, the judge has to be like Chana said. We have to look at what's inside the kankan, right, and not the kankan itself. And this is actually a very appropriate idea for Elul, right, for the month before Rosh Hashanah, because we are being judged. So we hope that God judges us on who we are internally, and that's really what we should be working on. That's the most important part of who we are, is who we are internally, not the externals. The externals are narishkeit, right? The externals are not important. And the internals are what really matters, not only for a judge, but for every person. And we also have to remember something else, that when we inevitably, we talked about this on Shabbat, inevitably we judge other people, right? And it's interesting. Scientific studies tell us that essentially you size someone up within a second of seeing them for the first time.
So there is...
That cannot possibly be based on who they really are. It's right, because how could you see someone walking in and they look a mess and they're dressed in a way which signals to you that whatever it signals to you, and boom, we judge them in a split second. Right? So here we're being told we have to slow down, we have to fight against that urge. Now, part of that urge, part of that, by the way, is a survival tech. It's like left over from the caveman days. When you saw a bear, you immediately ran away because you didn't have time to judge whether it was a nice bear or not a nice bear. Okay? But so it's a survival technique. That's true. So when you're walking alone in the dark alley and you see someone coming, okay, I think it's okay to turn around and go the other way. That's a survival technique. But we do it all the time. We do it in the supermarket. We do it in shul. We do it in the office, right, in a split second. And here it's reminding us that we have to really slow down, and a way to fight against that is to sort of suspend our judgment, and to really get to know a person before we think we really could size them up. Dove?
Is that?
So Barbara's, what she said is exactly correct. In other words, animals can't change, but we can. So
yeah.
This is not only to the judge can change, but the person who's judging others.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to change. Maybe you can make a snap judgment and say, you know, now that I've interacted with this person, I was wrong.
Right.
And now that I see that there's something underneath, it doesn't matter about the other stuff.
Right.
And so that's important.
But on the other hand, first impression, Mabisha Miskovic, first impressions are important.
But they're often wrong.
They might be wrong.
The question is, why are they important? I'm not sure if they're important.
They're important, but the thing is that somebody who's very slovenly doesn't care about himself, you figure, well, maybe he doesn't care about me either.
Well, that's exactly the problem.
I don't mean poor. I mean
but
slovenly.
That's exactly the problem. That we just because poor. Someone dresses a certain way, it doesn't necessarily speak to their character.
In not good clothes, but he's clean and
maybe
he doesn't
have a
I don't know. I don't know. Right? We never know. We never know. We never know someone's circumstances. A related. I think this is what Marilyn is getting at. A related concept of this is we have also it's also in Pirkei Avot this notion of don't judge a person until you're in their place. We don't know. We never know until we know, and usually we don't know because. We make a judgment, and then we decide to interact or not interact. Chana?
There is a story. I'll make it very, very short. It's long. So there was a rich man that did a party in a shtetl in Russia, wherever. And they invited all the important people of the city, and there was one poor man that wanted to come to the party. And when he came to the castle, the party, the guards didn't let him go in. No way that he, so he went and he borrowed from his friend a suit and he came to the party and the guard said, wow, welcome.
Right,
come
right.
In. So when they, and he didn't eat. So the Baal Bayit saw that he didn't eat anything. So why don't you eat? So he took the cup of whatever it was, the wine or something, and he poured it on his suit and he said, it's not me that need to drink the wine. The suit.
Right. Because the suit is the person left in. Yeah, very good. Right. Thank you. Yes, Dove.
I'm going to tell you on a study that was done by a sociologist over and over. They took the same person, put him on the street in, you know, poor clothes, and he would come to people and say, I'm poor, I'm hungry, I'm slovenly, look miserable. He said, can you give me something to eat? Then they put him in a suit. And he said, listen, I lost my wallet. I need money to get home. Can you give me
sure,
money?
Right.
The second time, always,
right,
always made
right.
much more money.
Right,
back.
So all these studies, they reinforce the same idea that we unfortunately judge people on externals, and it's very unfortunate. Okay, last comment. Okay, great. That's a good point. It is important how we dress, but that's for you. But then you. What about you? What about it? Is important that we dress in a clean way. We are clean as best as we do the best we can. But that doesn't mean if someone isn't that we get to judge them.
That's correct.
Right. So those are not connected. Those are not related concepts. One is yes, we should dress in a nice, clean, respectable fashion, but. If we see someone dressed in a way that doesn't meet our standards, it doesn't say anything about their character.
In Pirkei Avot, it says about Talmid Chacham Shein Bo Rebav.
I keep dressed in my best.
Correct, right. Okay, so anyway, I think this is a good idea for us to remember during Elul, both in terms of how we want to be judged. We don't want someone to judge us based on the way we look at a given moment, and certainly not God. And we should also, in the same vein, right? In the same vein, we should make sure that do our best to not judge others based on their look or on that split second decision, which is a leftover from a very old defense mechanism and safety mechanism, which is still important. But we have to do a little bit better to take a moment to pause before we. Before we go down that road.
Is there any